Hi and welcome back, everybody. Today we are joined by Tim Mobley. He is the president of Connect Global Solutions. Guys, it's recording on the 21st of May and we are still very much in the thick of the coronavirus pandemic here in Manila and across the world. We talked to Tim today about Connect, which is a BPO based out in Clark, and also, of course, mention the coronavirus and how the world is adapting from that. Hope you enjoy. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, we are joined by Tim Mobley. He is the president of Connect Global Solutions. I don't normally read the bios of people. It's useful to get a background, but in this case, you know, it really caught my attention. Tim Mobley, he's based in Hawaii. He is the president of Connect Global Solutions. He's an active board member of the emergency group, which is an emergency medicine physician group, and has over 20 years of management experience, including serving as the president of Hawaii's largest dental group and the VP of operations at an integrated clinic and hospital. And he also has marketing role experience at a number of Silicon Valley technology firms. He also began his career as an officer in the US Army. So we've got an incredible array of experience there. Tim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
And Tim, I want to start, of course, so you are the president of Connect Global Solutions, which is a BPO based in Clark, Pampanga. You are based in Hawaii yourself, and you have a medical background. How on earth did you get into this outsourcing game?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I was the president of a dental group, which I really enjoyed. Managing all aspects of that business. We had about 200 employees and 10 offices, 40 dentists. That's sort of a mid-sized business, especially for Hawaii. The owner, the controlling shareholder, walked in one day and he handed me a book about outsourcing. He said, "Hey, read this and do something." And that was 10 or 12 years ago, and I didn't know anything about anything. And I, did a bunch of research, and we started doing eligibility verification and payment posting for these dental patients in India. I had a friend whose family had some excess office space, because you can't call up a big Accenture type company and say, hey, can you give me three people to do Hawaii insurance eligibility work? And so we sort of figured that out, and it worked phenomenally well. It was a home run, and we were growing it, and I learned a ton of things along the way. And then after a few years, we wanted to grow it more, and my partner in India wasn't really able to do that, and it dawned on me that Philippines was half as far away and culturally much more similar to Hawaii. So we transitioned the business to the Philippines.
So you went through that whole journey of a very common journey, isn't it, for first-time people that are outsourcing and just trying to navigate the market. What did you think of outsourcing when when it was first plonked on your desk in a book form? And, what were you first faced with when you tried it yourself?
Oh, that's where do you start, right? Like, what processes, right? Which processes could we take from our office and have done somewhere else? And then, chicken and the egg, and who would we get to do this work for us? And how do we ever get them trained and managed to do the work that we wanted? And I asked my office managers, "Hey, is there anything that we could do that would, that would work?" And, "Oh no, Tim, nothing could possibly be done outside of the office." And, finally I got someone to try it, and she loved it, and she told the other office managers, and then they were clamoring, "Hey, when can we get our support team in India too?" And that was, sort of how we got started.
Wow. It's It's such a difficult kind of leap for people to make, isn't it? Until they've actually just done it themselves and realize it's no magic bullet. You know, it is just people and staffing ultimately. But there's incredible resources out there. There's incredible skills out there. And when you realize that, you know, there's such a vast difference in terms of salaries and costs and availability of resources, it's certainly incredible to think that not everyone is incorporating this into their business model.
It's phenomenally powerful. And one of the most important lessons I learned as a purchaser of these services, the president of the dental group, was that a big portion of the value creation actually came from improving our processes. We started saving money within months, and of the money we saved, 60% was through better processes, and only 40% was through the labor arbitrage. And that was quite surprising to me, and I wouldn't have had the confidence to jump into this level of staffing and these processes without the lower cost. But there was more value in the structured, better, more uniformly followed processes than there was in just saving the labor cost.
And again, we see that so commonly, don't we? Like businesses in the West, they think they have the upper hand in terms of sophistication and things, but they often come over maybe to the Philippines, maybe to India, and they see the sort of the step jump in sophistication in processes and just the fact that, you know, you have to get things out of your head onto paper, build processes, and optimize those processes. It helps a company mature, doesn't it? You know, from a sort of a scrappy startup or an SME in the West to more of an enterprise that has everything on paper and people are following processes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also helps with the transition to paperless office environment too, because you can't just hand the paper to the person next to you. And so it all sorts of things follow.
Did you see a lot of the advantage of building these processes? Was it through the adoption of tools, or, you know, is it just as simple as a Word document, and, you know, the essence is then within the processes? Or did you see a lot of your kind of salvation in specific tools?
So, technology is very important in a number of ways here. But in that specific example, there was nothing more sophisticated than Excel. It was just the process of actually documenting what our processes were and making sure they were consistently followed and measured and having structure around what we were doing. As you can imagine, dental offices are spread out geographically, and it's hard to centrally have common processes and to manage it. And so when we centralized this work and structured the processes, that's what created the value. As Connex has grown over time, we've started using more sophisticated tools and using technology and limited things like process automation. But in the beginning, it was just the process.
So what was the transition then? You obviously successfully explored outsourcing, integrated outsourcing into your then current business. And then, you know, it looks like you've been getting high on your own supply. You have now completely moved over to outsourcing. What was it, you know, about outsourcing that made you do a complete pivot and go so far as to set up your own BPO in the Philippines?
Oh, that's a funny analogy. My dream, sort of personally, had always been to start a business, and that's easier said than done. Where do you start? How do you do it? And this was working really well, and there was an ownership change at my employer, and it created the opportunity for me to do something different. And so I struck out and started this business because I knew it worked, and I thought it would be valuable for other people. And then you go through those same sort of challenges again, because I'd been the purchaser of these services, and I never really had to worry about the delivery side. So I had to build this delivery capability. But I would say that having purchased the services for 4 or 5 years gave me a good understanding of what people in my shoes wanted.
Tell me about that transition then. When was Connect started, and what was that initial ramp-up journey like for you?
Yeah, so yeah, I quit my job and okay, I was fully committed at that point, and I ended up partnering with a local title and escrow company, which was a phenomenally good decision for me for two reasons. One, it helped with the capital, so we both invested, and then it helped with a first customer, which was extraordinarily valuable, and it also diversified our experience base beyond just healthcare, which is really most of my experience. And so they with them as our first customer, I say about doing business in the Philippines is just like the US, except not exactly. So, things are a little different, but similar. We leased office space and hired people and set out to make it work.
You have a lot of reliance on processes. How has the awareness and importance of processes to you and Connects influenced, the design of Connects and then the operations of the accounts?
I think that's a good question. Let me answer it with the thing that's influenced Connects the most and how we approach everything we do is really my experience as a purchaser of these services. So from day one, I set out to deliver what I would have wanted as a purchaser, meaning the right sort of commitment of the partnership, the right mindset, the right approach. And we could go into examples of what that means. And part of that for mid-sized businesses is meeting in the middle in terms of what they're doing now and where they want to be. So for a business with less than 500 employees, let's say, it's rare, depending on the industry, of course, it's rare for them to have sophisticated and documented processes. So, and it's hard for us to even understand what they do. So you just can't go in and do what one of the big consulting firms would do for a very large national, multinational scale company. So we start by really sometimes they talk about lift and shift. We just take their processes and try to replicate them in the Philippines and then work to continuously improve what they're doing and how. And I realize that sounds kind of vague, but once you start putting these things on paper and looking like who's doing this and why are they doing it and how are we measuring the quality and so forth, opportunities become obvious and we just work to improve from there.
And you still freshly remember your own naivety or skepticism of outsourcing, and now, no doubt, you're convincing a lot of potential clients who still have skepticism of outsourcing. There's kind of 40, 50 million SMEs in the West, of which virtually none of them outsource. There's only about 0.5% penetration of outsourcing in the small and medium-sized businesses. This is, to all of us in the industry, it's an absolute no-brainer. Where do you see the skepticism and the friction and concern about starting outsourcing from these businesses stems from? And how do you confront that with businesses and give them the confidence to try outsourcing?
It's interesting. Most of the environment is changing, but in for the last couple of years in the United States, it's been a very low unemployment environment, and people have contacted us because they can't, a little bit's cost driven, but a lot of it is just finding the people they need to do the work. And typically there's an executive who president, chief operating officer, division head, who's trying to implement or considering outsourcing, and they're interested in it. And so, you know, there's not a whole lot of skepticism at that level. The skepticism is the president says this is a good idea, and then he or she says, okay, office manager or operations manager, this guy Tim he's here and he's going to help you. And that's where we get into the skepticism and the challenge. And the first part of it comes from fear. There's just an emotional reaction. Hey, these people are going to take my jobs, or they're going to take the jobs of my team and people who work for me. And it's very much a job-based fear. And, you know, so there's some change management around that. For the work we've done, it hasn't resulted in job losses in the markets at all. Most of the companies are trying to grow or change their structure, and they're just happy to have good people. But that's the sort of, you know, responsive type fear, emotional fear. And then the next level is it won't work, because typically these managers who are tasked with implementing it don't have any experience, and are their only experience is bad customer experience with a phone-based representative, and they think that the product that they're going to get for their back office tasks or even their customer support related work is going to be like their experience. And I have to talk to them about, you know, just kind of tell the story and what we're doing and examples, and explain what causes the bad experiences and what we're going to do differently to address those.
Where are some quick wins in outsourcing? Because you've got to, gain the confidence of clients. If people start off too complex, it maybe sets them up for maybe not failure, but a complex onboarding. Are there some common roles that you recommend people start with so that it's not too mission critical?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think the intention behind it is very important. And this is absolutely what I advise our clients is start with something small. And the benefit of a Connects type firm is we're willing to start with two or three people doing a repeatable process. So conceptually, it's something starting with something that's repeated greatly reduces the training requirement. So a good example is accounts payable. There's a reason there's a lot of accounting-based outsourcing firms. Accounts payable is very repeatable. The utility bill comes in, it gets coded the same way, it gets handled the same way every month, and so on. It's a very repeatable process. And but the value of that, in my view, is it reduces the training time, because if the person's expected to do something different every day, you have to train them every day, and you have to ramp them up and assess their learning. And if you start with something repeatable, it's easier to train and manage. And I think it's a great question. It's really important because that's what creates and simple, right? Repeatable and simple. And that's what creates the foundation for building a remote team or a staff augmentation, some sort of outsourced team. Because, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a person in another country, right? The Philippines is another country, and you're going to come in and learn a new system, learn a new geography, perhaps learn a new industry, and it creates a very high learning requirement as opposed to someone in the same geography who would come off the street. And there's all this context that we take for granted, but what happens after 6 months or a year of these sort of simpler tasks, they understand the system, they understand the geography, they understand working with the client, and they're in a much better place to learn more complex tasks, and they can teach the simple tasks to the person who worked for them. So AP is a good example. We started with real estate escrow, so creating escrow orders for real estate transactions, repeatable, high volume, easy to train. And then medical billing, there's a lot of tasks in medical billing that are repeatable, high volume. Some customer service is extraordinarily hard. Some customer service is straightforward. You know, whatever it is about the business that's repeatable, simple, and relatively high volume is the place to start. And everything I do, I think about creating a foundation for growth. And this initial team is the foundation for growth of your outsource team.
And for the newbie prospective client, how does outsourcing work? Do you manage the deliverables? Can people, you know, do it hour by hour, or is this a full-time dedicated staff member to their business? And then who manages the processes and deliverables of that person?
So this is one of the you know, as you go through life and business, people help you. And a friend of mine's brother worked at Hewlett Packard, and he managed their outsourced development team early on for a long time. And the way he explained it to me, and I've used ever since, is you think of it as staff augmentation and service delivery. So staff augmentation is a remote staff, Mexico, Philippines, India, Eastern Europe, that is working remotely as part of the client's staff. And the client's responsible for training, management, oversight, and the partner takes on the human resources, facilities, IT kind of roles, and that's how it's delineated. And then service delivery is when the partner takes on actually delivering a service. And in the first model, typically it's by the hour FTE or something. And then if you're in service delivery model, it's per unit of service. And for a number of reasons, Connect started with staff augmentation. This is part of outsourcing journey for a prospective client is figuring out the strategy that they want and the approach that they want, and then aligning their actions with that. And it's sort of my view on how this is best approached, really starting from my view as a purchaser of services, is some sort of staff augmentation or mini captive model. If you look at what the big multinationals do, JP Morgan, AIG, Goldman Sachs, take your pick. Most of them have Fidelity Financial have very large subsidiaries that they can control the IT, they can control the training, who gets hired, how everything works, and make sure the people are integrated into their processes. And I think the real place that Connect fits into this whole picture is helping mid-sized companies get to the efficiency and control and quality that a multinational with a captive would do without the investment required and the ongoing management that that it would take to have a true captive.
So, Tim, you obviously have a lot of experience in terms of management of people, management of processes, and optimizing the processes. How does the cost structure for clients work? Obviously, they're accessing staff on a staff augmentation basis, but then they have you overseeing, or certainly your organization overseeing that staff member and those processes. How does the cost structure work with Connect?
So this kind of goes back to what I wanted as a purchaser of services, something that's simple and straightforward and fair. And so we charge on a per person, per month basis, as if it were an exempt employee in the US. And so, you know, there's more hours in July than there are February, but our invoice is the same. And because otherwise the amount that the invoice would change in a low-cost labor situation would be very small, and it creates a new headache for verification if it's always changing. So this is a very simple per person per month. And you know, it's important to me. The provider that I use charged us extra on holidays and charged us extra for this and charged us extra for that. And so we make it a very simple, all-inclusive price. The only thing that we don't include is software, because you know, people have different software that they want their staff to use. But beyond that, all the let's call them variations in Philippine labor costs, we assume.
And then, of course, the price varies depending on the skill set and the experience of the individual workers.
Yes, absolutely. I tried for a long time to make everything the same. And then as we moved up the complexity chain, you know, one of our clients has a controller level person. There was no way that we were going to do that for the same price as an accounts payable person. But we use the same model, and our dollar margin doesn't increase. We just increase what the employee cost is. And so actually our percentage margin goes down, but the dollar amount stays the same, which is fine.
So we can't go past really speaking about the elephant in the room. It's, 21st of May as we record this, and we're amidst the coronavirus. Obviously it's a global pandemic. It's affected both Philippines and also the US and no doubt where your clients are sitting, Tim. How has that affected Connect in terms of your day-to-day operations?
You may find this, there's two aspects. One, the day-to-day operations. So most people involved with outsourcing are familiar that both in the Philippines and India, there have been relatively strict quarantines and work from home. So we had to transition very quickly to a work from home environment, which was quite challenging, but we were able to do it. We had 100% uptime. I'm very proud, actually. Our drivers and our team were up 36 hours straight driving people and equipment around, but we had 100% uptime during the transition to work from home environment. And then that's created some new management processes. We have virtual meetings and so forth, like everyone around the rest of the world. But perhaps counterintuitive, even for me, is, as I started thinking about it, to be honest, we've always worked very hard to deliver a great product. And that's always been priority one for me, because that's what I would want as a customer. But we never had to work very hard at business development. I was happy with, a reasonable growth rate, and people. We had enough word of mouth and existing client growth that our challenge was really managing that. And the biggest change for me from this whole crisis has been realizing that I'm going to have to do proactive business development going forward. And so we've hired one person already. We're going to hire a couple more people, and we're going to work on building business development processes, which is So we needed, as a growing company, we were going to have to do this someday anyway. It's just, it really dawned on me that this was creating the time to do that.
And, you know, aside from the depression or recession that the world's going to head into, how do you see the prognosis for outsourcing in the medium term? Do you think this whole thing is going to be, you know, forgotten and dumped, or do you see a potential upspike in the interest in outsourcing as a result of the behavioral changes from coronavirus?
Yeah, I think that's the $64,000 question, and there's definitely things that you would read and ideas on both sides of that. You know, the optimistic part of me likes this idea that, hey, if people are working from home, why am I going to pay a Manhattan or San Francisco wage for someone to work from home when I can get something just as good or better at a significantly lower cost with a different risk profile? You know, there's always risk reduction and diversification. So there's, you know, there's definitely a school of thought around some of that happening. And then, you know, then there's also going to be there's some trends towards localism and nationalism and not wanting to have work outsourced. My personal opinion is both of those factors are going to be impacting some people, but by and large, the growth in outsourcing will continue as a percentage of the total workforce. So those two competing things will be noise to some extent, and the march for it just makes sense to have a dispersed workforce and to search globally for the best talent. The big companies have been doing this for a long time, and you know, having a global workforce and global talent pool, and it's the steady march into the middle market, I think, is going to continue unabated with some variations in individual firm performance. And I think the biggest risk to the industry in the next 12 months is just the recession in general. Even if employment levels are down by 10% worldwide, even if the outsourcing industry may not go down relative to employment levels, but I think it's certainly going to be hit relative to where it was before, just because of the reduction in business activity.
The world has been forced into a crash course of remote work and working from home and having to quickly adopt and learn new tools like Zoom and maybe project management tools because people aren't in the office. Now, I think that has a huge positive impact for the potential of outsourcing, and people realize that, you know, there is the option to work from home, work remotely, and as you say, sort of tap into the global workforce more. But do you see that there could be a trend for people to outsource, but then not have them centralized in an office in the Philippines? You know, if people are going to the work from home model, do you think there'll be, or are you seeing any sort of increased influence or pressure for the Philippine teams to work from home as well as a permanent solution?
I don't know about permanent solution, but as an ongoing solution, we are seeing some pressure. One of our clients doesn't want his staff to return to the office because he's concerned about reliability. It creates risk of people getting sick, and he's happy with them working from home, and he would rather that continue. So I think we will have some of that. You know, we're in the world of opinions here. The majority, I would say the majority of my clients want their people to come back to the office. The reason is there's value. I believe there's value in collaboration, and many of them do as well. And I probably have to get deep in the details to explain this, but you know, where are you on this order, or where are you on this process? And they can look down the, you know, look over the shoulder, or this new task came in, who's going to pick it up? Some of that is just significantly harder when people are distributed at home. And so having the team in one place in the Philippines, I think is incredibly valuable. there are, you know, there've always been, I was talking to a you know, someone else in the industry about this. There's always been these companies that enable work from home employees worldwide. And there's a tremendous amount of value in that. And he said, and I agree, that model really starts getting tough at about 5 people. You know, you start managing 10 new people in 10 locations at a relatively low wage level, that becomes really challenging, the training and the management. I think, you know, 10 experienced software developers is much different than 10 people doing accounts payable or escrow order creation or some of these relatively less complex tasks.
Tim, final question. Why Clark Pampanga? You know, for those that aren't aware, it is, you know, about 2 hours outside of Metro Manila, and it is now becoming sort of one of the new development hubs of the Philippines. Huge amount of investment is going there, and it used to be an old U.S. Air Force base. But, you know, what went into your choice for setting up the BPO there, and why would you recommend it to clients?
So when I first started this as a when I moved the team from not actually, I actually didn't move, I expanded from India to Philippines as the purchaser. I talked to everyone I knew in Hawaii. Hey, who do you know in Philippines? Who does this? I got a bunch of leads. I flew over to Manila. I had a nice experience. I enjoyed it there. One of the people from Hawaii had started a accounting business in Clark. So he took me up to his office. I personally appreciated the green air and the security of Clark and the lower labor costs. And then I went to Davao, which was also beautiful. I unfortunately saw a little bit of violence in Davao and realized that I would have a hard time getting clients to go to Mindanao, which doesn't have the best reputation in much of the U.S. And so Clark was the happy medium.
And Tim, so if, you know, we've whetted anyone's appetite on this, if people want to reach out to you or know more about Connects, how can they get in touch?
I would love to talk to anyone about Connects or anything else related to outsourcing. I've been totally excited about what I've been doing the last 10 years. My email is tim@connects.solutions. And our website is www.connects.solutions.
That was Tim Mobley of Connects Global Solutions. If you want any of the show notes or to get in touch with Tim, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.